Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlatnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Patrick Grimes. Hi, Patrick.
Good to be here today, Mike. Looking forward to having a good chat.
Thank you for coming on a podcast. Let me do a short intro. Patrick is a founder and CEO of Passive Investing Mastery. As the founder and CEO, he's an international best-selling author, a Forbes Council contributor, and a serial entrepreneur specializing in alternative investments. His portfolio is diversified across energy, litigation finance, commercial lending, commercial equity or acquisitions, including retail, industrial, and thousands of apartments. So I'll keep it that short. I'll let you continue a little bit about you. Start with, did I forget anything important on your accomplishments list? And then a couple of words about you, your family. I know you're in Hawaii. You're in a much better climate than I am in New York, a little bit more pleasant. But talk a little bit about your journey. Have you always lived in Hawaii? Have you moved there? A little bit about your family.
Well, growing up, we moved around a lot. I was actually born in Italy. My dad was in the American Air Force. So I traveled. We were in Florida for a while. But mostly my formative years were all in California of the United States. And I spent some time in Southern and Northern. Most of my childhood that I remember was at Yosemite National Park, up in the mountains in the beautiful, beautiful country. So I did a lot of backpacking. Made my way to the big city for college. Did a mechanical engineering degree. Later on, did a master's in engineering and an MBA. Did machine design and automation. It's kind of my passion throughout my life until I went full time into investing. Never imagined that would happen at the time. I thought, man, I'm an engineer through and through. I love being a geek and I was good at it. So, I have a wife. She's wonderful. Sure. She does feature length animated film producing. I have a boy, 2.5-year-old, Emery, just wonderful kid, loving life right now. And yeah, we enjoy it here in Hawaii. We made this journey, through COVID, we started coming here and we ended up spending about more than half our time here and decided, look, we shouldn't have two places. We should have one. And we opted to make Hawaii the set of our second home, make it our home.
That's very cool. I'll acknowledge your journey. And so many people do what you do. They start with some kind of technical field, including me. I started, as a technology engineer, and then ultimately finished 15-year technology career, and then went to real estate full time. You have some similarity, as you were also on the technical engineering path, and then you decided that you had to move your journey to more, I guess, passive investing, and real estate is a great platform. So let's talk a little bit about passive investing mastery. What is it? What is this platform? How do you work with folks? How do you help folks? And we'll talk a little bit about litigation finance in just a second. Litigation finance, just curious a little bit about that. I haven't had much exposure and sort of energy, and just we'll get that in a second. But let's start with Passive Investing Mastery. What is that platform?
So Passive Investing Mastery is kind of a passion project for me. As an automation robotics engineer, I was in a lot of amazing facilities. We were contracted to do machine design by Google, Facebook, Johnson & Johnson, Abbott, Lockheed, Boeing, Tesla, all amazing companies. And I was in there working with some of the smartest people in the world. And they didn't know. I look back on those times and all they knew about were crypto or startup stocks, 401k. They had no idea, nor did I, about any kind of alternative investing options. And I was eager and I wanted to invest. I talked to the founder of the company that I was working for and he said, hey, you should invest in real estate. He said, my only regret was not doing more sooner. and that the high-tech ride is not going to get you that financial security you want for your future family. It's like, wow, that's insane. So I went, got into real estate. And that's what kind of led me into this alt space. And as I grew into it, I realized, wow, there's a lot of opportunity to invest in completely non-correlated investments, ones that don't rise and fall with the stock market, ones that don't even rise and fall with real estate, like legal, like medical, like education. And those can provide more stability. Being somebody who has seen the ups and downs and has ridden those waves, I started really developing an affinity for alternatives. And Passive Investing Mastery is really that platform. It's about alternatives outside of the stock market. It gives us the ability to educate. Every 2 weeks, we have an alternative investing mastery series session, which is my take on, I used to be the guy that would have a set of baseball cards of alternative investing options, and I would trade those with just a couple guys. And then I started talking about it on these webinars. People loved it. So I said, look, let's just show the whole deck. So every single session, mastery session, we bring up completely different alternative strategies. I bring a panel of two, three, maybe four people that are specialists in these alternatives, sponsors, educators, or strategists, tax, asset protection, retirement accounts, trust. And so Passive Investing Mastery really gives us me that ability to broad spectrum, blue ocean, the education I think every American needs. And that's, what are the ways to invest outside of the stock market, potentially even outside of real estate? There's hundreds of options that build really true financial security, that don't ride these same volatile waves. So you could build true pillars of wealth that will outlive any recession.
Yeah, I appreciate that wisdom. And what comes to mind is I'm a big fan of a follower of Ray Dalio. Ray Dalio does a lot of educational stuff. And one of the key messages that he talks about is folks should have 10, 12 non-correlated investments as a part of their diversification strategy. And it could include, obviously, some mainstream and some Main Street and some Wall Street investments. Obviously, stocks, bonds, mutual funds are sort of Wall Street, but you can go to Main Street. You can have, like you said, real estate, and you can do other alternatives. Energy is obviously an important alternative, and litigation finance, medical finance, all kinds of other niche opportunities do exist for sure. So the fact that they just got to be non-correlated, that's the key word, at least per Ray's Dalio theory, that you could have approximately same target returns, but reduce your risk volatility by 80% by doing this non-correlated investments in alternatives. So I subscribe to that theory. It makes a lot of sense. So it's great to hear that you are, that's your journey. So let's cover a couple of things that you do as part of that. And I kind of went to your website just to take a little more look. And you do have a litigation finance as one of these alternatives. Just curious what it is. I know what's medical receivables finance. People do that all the time. It's billing, advance for finance of, I guess, maybe similar with lawyers, right? Somebody needs that liquidity, and these litigation lawsuits need to get settled. So, or takes time to actually complete the lawsuit. So just explain how it works. Is it fronting of the money to complete the lawsuit to get to settlement or get to a judgment? And what kind of, how does it work?
Well, Mike, you're not alone when you don't know about it, because it is what I consider to be a novel asset class and relatively new to the accredited investor public. However, it's been very active in the United States as early as 1910, when a bunch of people were walking around with these horrific diseases, and they started thinking, look, man, maybe it's these cigarettes. I know that they're saying these cigarettes are healthy for us, but I don't know. I mean, because we're all dying these terrible, terrible diseases. And so a third party stepped in and said, hey, look, I will help fund your attorney. I will help finance this litigation. And then these attorneys said, look, we'll work under a contingency fee basis, meaning we're not going to go pro bono for free, but what we'll do is we'll provide access to you, the harmed individuals, for a side of the settlement, for a part of the settlement. And typically in our world, that's about 40, 50% of the settlement amount. And we're not in class actions, where class actions are maybe somebody gets $50, $75, and it's all one lawsuit, it's big win-loss risk. We're in individual lawsuits, so which have meaningful settlements. So ones where people are awarded $100,000, $400,000 for the harm, for the harm that has caused them. And basically, just like a real estate debt fund, like our real estate debt fund, it's an asset-backed lending strategy. And legal funding is a proliferate thing. Is the legal industry is the size of the global airline industry. And so when you're approaching the mechanics of lending to operators in the legal industry, it's similar to lending to operators in the real estate industry. We want to find those guys who have a track record, who have been doing this for a while, that are well capitalized, have the staff necessary to execute on the business plan. What is that business plan? Well, in real estate, it's to either acquire buildings or improve those, CapEx to improve those buildings so that they can provide housing to tenants. Well, in the legal industry, it's most often an attorney who's working on contingency, has assets, which are these agreements with these harmed individuals that says they're representing them and they're going to be awarded some percentage of the claim. And just like in the real estate space, you can have an appraiser appraise the price of the building. You can have a law firm valuation specialist, which we do, go through the docket, the attorney's docket, it's the list of contracts of clients, look in there and say, hey, look, do these people have medical conditions? Let's look at the medical records. Do these people have proof of harm? Do they have proof of exposure to this chemical, this device, or whatever it was? And do they apply to a lawsuit? Do those two apply to a specific lawsuit? And is that lawsuit already in settlement negotiations? What would it be worth? What is it worth right now? Has lawsuits already been won just like it? What is that worth? And so these law firm valuation specialists can get in there and evaluate the value of an attorney's assets. That's the value of the fees that they would get back from the thousands of agreements that they have in a case or more cases, portfolios of cases. And so we'll take that value and we'll lend against it. Just like in a real estate deal, we'll typically 10, 20, 30%. Just real estate, you'll be 50, 60, 70, 80, 90%. But in litigation finance, you lend the loan to that collateral value is a little, quite a bit lower. Gives you a lot of cushion for volatility. And then you put a lien, just like in real estate, you got a deed of trust, litigation finance, you put a UCC1 filing on the attorney and the assets, and you have carve outs for them. Put a financing agreement in place, just like you have financing agreement. And those guys, those attorneys, they need capital primarily for two reasons: to add additional clients or claimants to a case that they're already working. In other words, they're already putting in the time. They've already marketed and found a bunch of people that are similarly harmed for a case that they're up against. And the more people they get, the more intimidating they are. So they want to get a lot of them. So they could use help. Hey, I've got all these claimant agreements. Can I take a loan out against these and help fund more marketing to get more claimants? And that'll increase my settlement leverage. It'll make myself more intimidating and I'll provide a bigger carve out. Maybe so I'll settle sooner. So it's either acquiring claimants similar to acquiring real estate, or maybe they just need operating expenses to help get that case across the finish line. And so we can lend against it and say, look, you can use these for operating expenses, just like how a real estate investor might say, look, I need CapEx because I got to get this business plan across the finish line. I need to improve my existing building. These guys may need to complete the case and complete that business plan and pay their rents so that they can provide access to justice and get to settlement. So that's the mechanics. And the cases is probably really interesting too, Mike, if you're interested to hear about that. Sorry for the long answer.
Well, let me ask a couple of quick questions. So yeah. I appreciate in-depth overview of this is an asset class. It's a specialty strategy. It requires in-depth understanding how to evaluate these assets, because these are not like a hard collateral, but just more intellectual property type of assets. I'm familiar with medical receivables, but that is likely fronting payments due from insurance companies. So that is a little bit clear. My wife is in the medical field, so I can clearly understand. But I can imagine the same way you can evaluate some of these lawsuits and the likely value of either possible settlements or, you know, if you win, then the number is obviously drastically higher. So I and that business is understood. What is the product? What kind of interest rates are you able to loan at? Even let's call it conservative leverage, right? The conservative leverage in that product may be 30%, while in real estate could be 65%, right? It's a different type of collateral. So, but what interest rates typically do you charge for loaning to attorneys to do what you just described as far as expanding their case, getting more clients, and et cetera? So just curious what that and what kind of term. So it's the term, is it the line of credit, is it a 3-year duration, 2-year duration? Just give me a little more color on from your perspective as an investor or lender into that business. What do you get out of it?
Yeah, it's a really good, great question. I'll put a couple things into context. The reason why I didn't follow your thread of comparing it to medical receivables is because they are fundamentally different. Just to be so, so medical receivables is factoring. It's actually buying an accounts receivable, whereas we actually, it's not creating a financing agreement and a lien on somebody to perform. It's you actually purchasing that receivable.
Well, the two things I've seen. I've seen you either buy receivables or you finance receivables. So you could be a lender secured by the receivables.
Okay. So in this particular case, it's more analogous, I think, to real estate operators, because as you said, in this case, it's not a physical property. It is a real tangible corporate asset, right? Yep. And that's what we're getting a lien against. But let's talk about that. So your questions were great because they lead kind of into this next. Now, what is the benefit essentially to the investor or what to the attorney, right? What do we lend at, right? And how does that flow through? You got to look and you say, well, it has to do something to do with risk. You acknowledge that loan to value and litigation finance quite a bit lower typically than it is in real estate. So like any investment, like any asset-backed lending or any kind of investment, there's a range in different kinds of investments you can make. You made the comment, if it wins, right? And so a lot of people in approaching litigation finance, they think about almost like rolling the dice. Like you're like, it's a binary win-loss, right? And that can be the case if you're doing something more analogous to oil and gas wildcatting, where you're going out in the middle of nowhere and you're just drilling and hoping you'll find some bubbling crude, and you may get 100x returns or lose everything, right? And that's what we call early staged, similar to angel investing into startups. Really early, could get 1000x return or more often lose it all. And so just like in real estate, oil and gas and venture capital, it can be really early staged where you get a charge huge returns for your capital and maybe you're going to make it big or lose it all, or you can be really late staged all the way to the point where the judges gaveled down, the settlement's been made, and it does become a receivable because the payment's underway, and then you can buy that receivable, much more similar to the medical device or the medical receivables you're talking about, where it purely is just a fractional percent difference, right? Or you're collateralizing these actual receivables. But before they gavel down, there's this range. And in this timeline, typically in single event cases, like we just won a case with sexual assault victims in the LA Juvenile Detention Center. And if you look, when I say that, I mean, we contributed to an attorney to help him locate victims of sexual assault that were housed in the last 10 years in the LA Juvenile Detention Center. If you look online right now, LA Juvenile Detention Center, That was typically a 1 or 2 year timeline. Now, there's lots of other cases and there's of similar cases to know what these settle at. There's, it's been through the court system to determine, is this a wildcat opportunity? No. Why? Because it's been through the court system to the point where they've done discovery. They've seen that it's happened, that it actually did happen, and that the, they did not do the proper disclosures to law enforcement over a long period of time and didn't correct this behavior over a long period of time. Causality and liability are the legal terms. And once you determine that, you're not quite to a receivable, but you're in what we call late staged, right? When it's not a coin flip anymore, it's not a coin flip. It's much more so the attorney saying, look, I'm headed to the finish line here. We're already in negotiations. It's super easy to underwrite this because we know what these settle at on other cases. We know this case is currently in talks to settle around these numbers. And here's the intake forms with the medical records and proof of exposure. In this case, attendance at the juvenile detention center, you know, those kinds of cases. And so we can lend kind of that pre-factoring or pre-receivable, but late staged. Now you got to also think that in that time frame, depending upon the case, maybe that's 1 or 2 years in single event type cases, like a sexual assault, where each of those are individual. But that can be the whole timeline of a mass tort can be 7 years. Like, for example, we're currently funding one for Camp Lejeune water contamination. We have an attorney who's representing multiple attorneys that are representing thousands of different harmed military civilians and their families that were present at the Camp Lejeune Marine base for a 17-year period in which they were exposed to harmful chemicals. The DOJ acknowledged this. They took responsibility for it. It's gone through the court systems. Discovery was done. The disease for toxicology reported on the harm. The causality and liability is there. A law was passed, the Camp Lejeune Just Relief Act, and the U.S. Judgment Fund was put to pay claims. A grid was published saying, based on how long you were there and what your disease was, here's how much your settlement is. All of those things, called it late stage, means we're not rolling the dice, right? We know, based on due diligence of medical records and proof of exposure, that they have had a certain disease for a certain amount of time. And we can lend on that. So that's what we call late stage. Keep in mind, 90% of civil cases settle anyway, so it never really is a 50-50 coin toss. But you really late stage, it becomes more about, Mike, when you're going to get the settlement and how much. If you get on late stage, we hope that we're late enough to the point where it's maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe on the outside 5, maybe there's some trickling ones in. But in a diversified portfolio of thousands of late stage cases, we're expecting to see the majority of those come back in years 2, 3, and 4. We're already seeing some settle now, right? And maybe we'll have some outliers, but it's not like a real estate deal where you're waiting for one refi or one sell event and it's all back-ended. It's thousands of individual things coming in through the middle.
So let me just add a couple of questions. I, by the way, I greatly appreciate the in-depth explanation that you lend towards the late stage of a legal process where your confidence factors are high. So everything you explain in my head resonates with more predictable outcome. Not guaranteed, of course. I mean, these things still have to shake out, mm-hmm. but more predictable. The Camp Lejeune, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, you see those ads all over TV because the settlement has been reached on a, I guess, national scale. And all these, attorneys are looking for more soldiers who were stationed, and they literally, it's a plug and play. They just get added to the lawsuit, and then the likely settlement scenario is pretty high. So all that is understood, and late stage is understood. So with all that, your risk profile is reduced. And then the other element you mentioned, what I heard from you, is diversification across multiple or many cases, which is typical with a fund, right? You spread the risk. It's not any different than a hard money loan portfolio fund, right? You have 100 loans or 50 loans or whatever that is. It's a portfolio. All that is appreciated. I can certainly see how it makes sense. I still want to get the kind of high-level answer to the question, what kind of rates of return? So I know the lending rates and hard money lending, right? That is, if you ask me today, I can tell you the range today. I'm just curious what they are in, you know, legal lawsuit settlements or whatever they're called, or the finance of the lawsuits. I'm just curious, at late stage, what are the rates of return? Give me some ballpark number. Is this 14%, 15%, 18%, 25% annual rate? And by the way, I'm completely in agreement. If you are investing in early stage energy development, high-tech startups, any of that stuff, exploratory, high risk, you know, those are, you write 10 checks, you expect one home run and nine strikeouts, right? This is different. You write 10 checks, you expect nine singles or doubles and maybe one strikeout, right? That's kind of how I'm hearing this. And just confirm if that's the right understanding, it's a late stage settlements, and then what the rates look like in term, and then let's move on to the next discussion.
And I appreciate you being patient with me, Mike, because I was hesitant to give you returns when there's a lot of different kinds of litigation finance from wild early stage to factoring receivables late stage, which go from 100x's to, you know, 10, 12%, right? And we're kind of in that range of late stage where we're projecting above a 20% IRR, so 20 to 35. But every litigation finance fund or type of investment is different. So it is very specific to our very narrow strategy that allows us to kind of get a little higher return than just a receivables factoring, but a calculated return because we're close to the finish line. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's the risk reward profile, right? So you're not exactly medical receivables, you're not exactly hard money lending, but you're at the same time not rolling the dice with the, you know, a lawsuit with no proven track record. It's just a, you know, wild goose chase. You may hit a massive home run or could be a complete, you know, strikeout. So I get it. Understood. So what else you like to invest in? I'm just curious. This was a unique asset class. I appreciate all that explanation. What do you do today in real estate? What do you like today in real estate? And then if you're doing anything with energy, I'm not an expert in energy. I've seen mineral rights investments, some exploratory projects. It's a wild west over there. So I'm just curious, just give me your comments on what do you like in real estate today? Is it lending? Is it equity? Just give me the comments relevant to today. We're recording this in late June 2025, where we are in the cycle and where you see opportunities.
Well, it's interesting because we didn't talk about this, Mike, but I actually lost everything in a development deal, my first real estate deal in 2009 and 10. And so I've ridden through the cycles and I've been very over eager in the past to double, triple my money and try and get rich quick and as a snot-nosed engineer, but then lost it all. That was in residential real estate. And bringing it forward to today, what we see is very similar kinds of course, there wasn't a big mortgage fraud thing, but we see a similar cycle happening in commercial real estate. Commercial real estate's taken a colossal hit. And this time right now is about the best buying time in my lifetime for commercial real estate, whereas 2009 and 10, it was the best time of residential real estate. And in commercial real estate, it's not just acquiring, it's also lending. And that's why we both acquire now and we lend now. And it's not any kind of asset. We're sniping specific opportunities where these operators are financially distressed, but they have good assets, they have good properties. And those opportunities are abundant right now. And either these individuals, they really need more time and we can lend at high interest rates because interest rates are high. Banks are hitting with liquidity issues right now because their bonds devalued, their other loans aren't paying out. So the banks are not lending on what we call small balance commercial real estate. That's kind of like 500,000 to 6 million. It's somewhat of an ignored area. So we're able to come in and lend at great interest rates, 12, 13, 14%. And that's how we do our debt fund and income and provide outsized returns with 90 days, 6 month, 1 year, or 3 year lockups with strong liquidity. Or if they don't need more time, they just need out, we can buy it in cash in our acquisitions fund. And that is what's incredible, is that you can really today in commercial real estate, not multifamily so much, or not office so much. We're actually more a little more favorable in what you've seen a big resurgence in, not a decline. You've seen a lot of decline in multifamily, but you see a lot of resurgence in some industrial, manufacturing, warehousing, you know, during COVID especially, but now with the trade war going on. So a lot of opportunity there. And also some retail centers in certain markets. We've seen some incredible buys where you can literally make your return on the buy. You don't have to hold it for 3 to 5 years, inject a ton of capital, turn that into improvements and hope that that correlates to value gain. You can make your return on the buy like you could in residential real estate in 2009 and 10. And so we call that recessionary income, recessionary acquisitions, because it's opportunistic evergreen funds that are producing really great returns, finding really incredible opportunities. We believe this will continue for another 3, maybe 5 years, but we're going to do as much as we can of that lending and acquiring. And our acquisition strategy is to buy quick and exit quick, which is awesome. It's working. And we're going to keep doing that. So that's why I say, like, real estate in general, not a great opportunity right now. But if you're an opportunistic fund specifically positioned with heavy cash to lend and heavy cash to acquire quickly, you can do some real damage right now, like those people that became billionaires in 2009 and 10, because they bought, they were liquid and they bought at the right time.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I agree. Right now is a phenomenal time to come into commercial, because resi, interestingly enough, residential real estate has not corrected enough, not on a broad basis. Some markets have corrected, but resi hasn't responded to higher for longer interest rates, while commercial has. So commercial valuations are off the peak heavily, and if you can get into those motivated seller situations, you get phenomenal terms. And on the lending front, banks stepped out and private credit stepped in. So it's a great time to be a lender, as interest rates, you know, we used to lend at 10, 11, you could lend today at 14. They can, let's call it, same level of risk and just get a better return for the same risk profile.
Exactly.
Or being an equity play. Yeah, just basically equity side. I concur with you. You know, years ago, I developed methodology called investment quadrants, just like Robert Kiyosaki has his quadrants. I had my quadrants. And to make a long story short, I had an income quadrant and a growth quadrant and investment grade and speculative grade. And I'll just tell you this. A lot of the deals today, they all look like investment grade, which basically means exactly what you said. You make money on the buy. You're very downside protected by virtue of incredibly deep buy. And you're also getting cash flow from day one today. This is the crazy part. You don't have to wait for a couple of years, because you're buying these assets at such steep discount that you have a positive spread between the interest rate, between your cap rate and your interest rate. So yeah, so you're preaching to the choir, in a manner of speaking. I concur with that statement wholeheartedly. And a lot of investors are still shy to, it's almost like Warren Buffett says, be greedy when others are fearful, be fearful when others are greedy. A lot of investors are fearful to go in, but it's a time to be greedy. So it's almost a great contrarian play today if you have the courage to act and you have the cash to act, in a manner of speaking.
And the strategy, I mean, I said, it's really not a good time for real estate unless you have the right kind of strategy to win in a downturn, really find that upside of the downturn, which you've mapped out there. A lot of people are not doing that. Some people are still doing the old school playbook of buy from a broker at top dollar and try and inject capital and hope that that interest rates come down, hope that rents go up. None of that's been happening. Hope that.
Well, the whole purpose of investing today is to get a deep value deal. So if people call me and they tell me a deal, give us a deal, I really need to understand why it's a great deep value buy. Not a good, a great one. If it's not a great one, what, why bother? It's just be a lender, don't take the risk. So I concur.
I can talk about the market a little bit. You asked about the market, and I would love to answer that question if that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead. We have a little bit of time. So provide your commentary, and then you have any good book recommendation, and what's the best way to reach out?
Okay. Yeah, what you said about the market, real estate downturns happen about every 15 years, right? And we're certainly due for one. And so I don't necessarily think real estate's your end all be all. I was a high tech automation robotics engineer that found my way to diversify my portfolio as one of those allocations being real estate. It was never the end all, the end game. And when I went all in and when I lost it all. And here we are, you know, many years later, due for another downturn. As an engineer, Mike, you look at the numbers, right? While it always makes sense to be diversified, true diversification, not just in lots of kinds of one asset, but in assets that completely different market fundamentals that aren't driven by the same market cycles. That's why I talk about things like healthcare, litigation finance, even CPA firms or HVAC guys. These are guys that are needed regardless, right? Well, it makes sense in any time because you don't know when that next downturn is going to happen. Probabilistically right now, Mike, you can resonate with me on this. 11 out of the last 14 Fed rate hikes ended in a downturn. We just got done with one of the most aggressive Fed rate hikes of all time, especially in my grandfather's lifetime. And it's in just the point of brink of collapse that just that alone would cause. But what else is going on? What other key macroeconomic indicators? Our debt is spiraling out of control. Another key macroeconomic indicator that we may be in trouble, there may be a correction or a dollar devaluation. Meanwhile, we're in a trade war. We're in a trade war, also a major macroeconomic threat to the stability of a recession. And we're actually at war now. We actually today are actually at war as a country, not even through a proxy. We literally bombed Iran, wanting current events. Another key macroeconomic indicator that traditional markets are at risk. Those traditional markets are where most of the wealth of America is held because they're taught retirement account, retirement account, retirement account. And Passive Investing Mastery's intention is to provide just the knowledge and education. We do have alternatives, but what I tell investors to do is go home. Think about all of what I just said there. On our slide decks, we always have these pie charts and these bar charts, which show the allocation of the middle class, the high income, and the ultra wealthy, and the pie charts of, you know, the different of where they allocate to different kinds of assets. And what you'll find is real estate's like 20%, 25%, but then they have another 25% in other alts. And then the rest were traditional fixed income. Where is that allocation? Where are your funds? Based on the instability of broader economic indicators right now, how comfortable do you feel about your allocation strategy? How many investments do you have that don't ride those same waves? What if you added one slice? We moved some money around, reallocated to an industry like the legal industry, which is just straight as an arrow, like healthcare and education. People need representation in good times. They need it even more so in bad times. Just goes like this. Just simply doesn't care about interest rates, doesn't care about gold, doesn't care about oil and gas, doesn't care about the stock market. The rule of law in the United States of America is known worldwide as just a steady, tried and true process. So think about it. Think about that. Well, what if Mike's talking about medical receivables? We're talking about all kinds of, what if you added slices, completely non-correlated investments? Would you feel better? Would you sleep better at night? It's worth the time and effort to step out there and learn about these, get educated, because each time I've made a step into alts, I felt better about my portfolio. It's been worth it.
Yeah, I appreciate the wisdom. And I'll just add one quick comment and then go back. You know, you think about a good book to recommend and then the best way to reach out. Yeah, so this non-correlated investments portfolio allocation is a classic dilemma and a classic need for a lot of investors to do. Too many people are just used to what they've seen through the Wall Street. And what you're talking about, essentially, allocations quite often used by the Rockefellers, the highly affluent and highly successful folks, where they're using alternatives as a way to build a much more predictable portfolio. And completely agree with the point that people should not go into anything too heavy. You just don't know what's going to succeed and it's going to be a strikeout. Another way to also pay attention to this, and this is particularly relevant today, is even if people are aware of this methodology, they often forget to rebalance. So rebalancing is a critical element to the same concept of non-correlated investments. And the fact that your stocks might have done phenomenally, your precious metals, gold, could be up a lot. Your crypto, your Bitcoin is doing really well. However, if you look at the commercial real estate, you have tremendously under-allocated sector. Or you could also add additional strategies like finance of litigation finance and similar. So all I'm saying is I concur or agree with your thinking and just adding that rebalancing factor, because a lot of people invest and forget, and then some time passes and they wake up and how am I doing? Well, you happen to be doing great here, but not so good here. So what do you do? And the logical question is you rebalance and you allocate where you should be a little bit more weighted. What's a good book that you'd like to recommend, and how would folks reach out?
Well, can I recommend my own, because we give it away for free? This is it's Lessons from Thought Leaders. And I told my whole story, my wife and I journey from high tech to losing it all, my first deal, making it up the corporate ladder, busting my ass, moonlighting at night, trying to do single family, and then finally learning how to trade up into apartments and energy and alts, and then building the passive investing mastery platform to educate. And I hope that it inspires those that are out there that feel like, hey, there's something missing from my investment. There's something missing from my life that builds a little bit of fear. I'd like to take steps. And there's also there's a lot of other great, Phil Collins, lead guitarist at Def Leppard, tells his story, an actual rock star. I'm sitting here next to a Navy SEAL. I'm probably the geek on here. There's the Kevin Eastman, Tom Ziegler, Dennis Waitley, all kinds of really amazing. It's such an incredible, Brian Tracy did The Forge, such an incredible book. I give it away for free. If you go to passiveinvestingmastery.com/book and you put the name of this podcast in there in the promo, if it's blank, we don't send them out. But you can either download the ebook, or you can download the ebook and I'll sign and ship you a copy. And I hope that it helps. If you're investors out there that are resonating with what Mike and I are saying, which is, man, I do kind of feel like I would love to do some alternatives, but what are those? Then I challenge you to go to investwithpatrick.com. If you go to investwithpatrick.com, I have a PDF you can download. That's Patrick's favorite alternatives that any investor can invest in now to start building more financial security, not just independence in one volatile asset driven by one market wave, but security across lots of different non-correlated investments. I just list them. Here's the non-correlated investments that you can invest in today to help start that journey. And then on one page, I do that. And then I dig deeper into what they all are and how they work and point you in some directions of where to go do that. And if you want to learn more, join our webinar at passiveinvestingmastery.com. We have a bunch of three alternative investment options: private credit and real estate, cash flow, growth in real estate, opportunity to win from the downturn here, as well as litigation finance, diversified litigation portfolio, and set up a call. If you'd like to get to know me, and I'd love to get to know you, and whether we're a stop along your journey or not, I'd love to hear your story. And man, I have exposure with my platform to 50 now different recorded videos where we deep dive into different alts. I'm sure we'll find at least a couple that resonate with what you want to get into, and we get you pointed in the right direction.
Thank you, Patrick. Appreciate your wisdom. Appreciate your sharing, offering the book. And I'm sure some folks will reach out. And and thanks for running those mastery events and inviting me to one of those things. And we'll talk about some things in real estate. But I see the breadth of various strategies, and some strategies I wasn't aware of. So thank you for sharing your wisdom on litigation finance and other topics. Thank you.
Thanks again for having me, Mike.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.